building a violent, shadowy federal police force?
Sure. I don't know what else I could really add to his ex-wife's statements. They did have an acrimonious divorce. She did say to me that his demeanor really changed when he did become a Border Patrol agent, and they drifted apart for reasons, unknown. In terms of the most recent article you mentioned, I did do, I worked on a story really looking at, beginning in L.A. and certainly in Chicago and now Minneapolis, we see a rampant use of these, so-called less lethals, pepper balls and rubber bullets and pepper spray and that sort of thing. And their use has really been blatantly, flagrantly in violation of the agency's own rules and policing norms. For instance, firing at people's heads and crotches, throwing tear gas into cars where there are children, using these launchers in ways that, they're meant to deploy a weapon into a crowd, but they're hitting people and causing serious injury. And that story actually is relevant in what we saw with Alex Preti's death. That scene really escalates when a Border Patrol officer fires pepper spray at his face, causing disorientation, and several officers pile on. It'd be hard to imagine anyone in that scene really had their bearings of what's going on as those noxious chemicals are floating around.
J. David McSwain, want to thank you for being with us, investigative reporter at ProPublica. We will link to your new piece, The Two CBP Agents Identified in Alex Preti's Shooting, and your previous pieces, including Trump's immigration forces deploy so-called less lethal weapons in dangerous ways, skirting rules and maiming protesters. To come to our February 23rd, 30th anniversary event, go to democracynow.org.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
Independent media is now more important than ever, and we want to know how KBOO Community Radio can best serve you. KBOO's Board of Directors invites you to a community meeting on Saturday, February 21st at 11:30 a.m. at the Clinton Street Theater and online via public video conference. This is your opportunity to share feedback, offer ideas, and help guide the station's direction. The meeting will be followed by a social hour. That's KBOO Community Radio's community meeting on Saturday, February 21st at 11:30 a.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. For more information, visit kboo.fm/community26.
Hey, good morning and welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. My name's Abe Proctor, and joining me once again, the inimitable Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
Well, we have a whole lot to report on today, from updates on what's been going on here in Portland to the developing situation in Minneapolis. We're going to take a flyover of the sordid world of Jeffrey Epstein, and we're going to talk about the detention of Black journalists in a clear violation of their First Amendment rights, and talk about the possibility of a war with Iran, among other things. But first, the most pressing and important news of the week, the documentary about First Lady Melania Trump. You saw it, didn't you, Tracy?
What? I wouldn't waste one second. I haven't even seen the preview of that movie.
Well, the Melania documentary opened this past week to mostly empty theaters across the country. This did not, however, stop the administration from crowing about its success. It did about $7 million of business in its opening weekend, which supposedly in the realm of documentary films is quite the windfall. But circumstantial evidence would suggest that there is a distinct lack of enthusiasm for a documentary film about the current First Lady. In fact, Tracy, when browsing social media late last week, I found a screenshot of a Craigslist ad from Boston offering people $50 to show up and sit through an entire screening of the Melania film.
I saw the same thing and I said, they couldn't even pay me. There's no way.
But if you came here for a substantive critique of that film, you came to the wrong place, because I think I can say with some confidence that neither of us will ever subject ourselves to that film.
Absolutely not.
All right, on to much more serious things. We mentioned during the intro the arrest and detention of two Black journalists in Minneapolis. One, Don Lemon, the former anchor for CNN, now an independent journalist, and a local former anchor and now independent journalist, Georgia Fort. Both were arrested for documenting the disruption of a church service last week at a church whose pastor was the field commander for the local ICE outpost in St. Paul, Minnesota. The service was disrupted. Nobody was injured. Nothing was vandalized. It was simply a disruption of that service. Don Lemon and Ms. Fort have been arrested, ironically, maybe not, under a Bill Clinton-era law designed to permit unobstructed access to reproductive health clinics. There's just a lot going on here, Tracy.
I mean, we're in the really dumbest timeline, but I continue to say, right, like... what's interesting is there's this critique right now, and the critique goes something like this. We're not in Nazi Germany, we're in America, and it's always been like this, right? And I think about, you know, American history and Ida B. Wells reporting on the lynchings that were happening in the country and ended up in a similar way, right? Having to be hidden in her community as the local government, local authorities were looking for her to shut her stuff down, right? It is not new for Black journalists in this country to be under attack for telling the truth. And there's a reason why there is such thing as called Black journalism, right? And I include myself in that, although I am not a study of journalism per se. I've been doing this work now for quite some time. And you know, really bringing forward the Black voice in that, and a critique based on my experience as a Black person in this country. While that is true, there is also this element that these particular people who are in power now are taking cues from Nazi Germany. And what we know of Nazi Germany is that it did go after journalists who did not speak of the regime in positive ways. They did go after political dissidents who also spoke of the regime in not positive ways. And those people end up in work camps, in concentration camps, dead along with, you know, 6 million other people. So we just, two things can be true, right? That there is a history of America, but the people currently in power are following cues from the Nazi regime.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I also think it's worth noting also that journalism has become in recent years an increasingly imperiled profession. The International Federation of Journalists reported that in 2025, which is to date the most deadly year to be a journalist in modern history, 111 journalists were killed. About 46% of those deaths occurred in and around Gaza. And as I, yes, so this is the continuation of a trend. There's been a spike in the detention and murder of journalists in recent years, particularly as they report on what's been happening in autocratic countries. Journalists worldwide might be considered something of an endangered species as far as professions go. Now, obviously, Don Lemon and Georgia Fort were not murdered. But certainly they were arrested and charged with a crime in what seems to be an absolute violation of their First Amendment rights. So we've talked a lot about the First Amendment in the context of the ongoing protests against the Trump administration. Most of that commentary on this program and elsewhere has been about the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances, which is one of the many freedoms ensconced by the First Amendment. Also, and I would argue equally important pillar of the First Amendment is the protection of the free press. Don Lemon and Georgia Fort broke no laws, nor did they violate anyone's constitutional rights when they attended that church service. I don't know about the protesters who themselves disrupted the service. I don't know. I don't know if that act might be considered an infringement of people's right to worship, but certainly documenting the disruption was not. And given, Tracy, the personal beef that exists between Don Lemon and Donald Trump, I think it's exactly easy to see how this was a politically motivated arrest.
Absolutely. And there's scuttle right now happening that's basically saying that Trump is, you know, planning to have he and his cronies in a room to come up with their list of people they want to go after. If you don't see what happened to Jasmine Crockett in Texas of redistricting and redistricting her out of a political position, you're not seeing the forest through the trees. If you're not seeing that he was, you know, he had nasty names for Don Lemon back in like 2016-17 because Don Lemon was reporting on everything that he was doing. So these are long-standing grudges, and this person that is currently in the White House holds deep grudges, and he figures out ways to get his establishment and people who are behind him to remove those people from his ire. And so this is just another step in that. A continual and not even gradual, but very obvious and on the nose attempt to remove the people that he doesn't like so that they don't have the power to continue to critique him.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And we're mentioning the political context of these arrests. And it's obvious just from the, as we just discussed, the past relationship between Lemon and Trump. But also, a judge in Minnesota declined to sign off on charges against Lemon about a week before he was arrested on the grounds that the government had no case. So the Justice Department then went out and got an indictment against Lemon, sidestepping the judiciary in order to make this political arrest, which took place, ironically or humorously or however you want to take it, during Lemon's coverage of the Grammy Awards in Los Angeles. So there's a lot here that's not above board. Perhaps most disturbingly, this sidestepping of the judiciary, which goes hand in glove, we must note, with the many, many times in recent history that the Trump administration has ignored court orders, perhaps most notably and prominently in the context of their ongoing occupation of the Twin Cities in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Tracy, you're right. The analogs to Nazi-era Germany are plentiful.
Yeah, a listener of the show, Dee, says, Mein Kampf is said to be the only book that Trump has ever read, and it is on his bedside. And I've heard that for many years. It is unreadable drivel. If anyone who's ever tried to read Mein Kampf wants to call in and let us know how that went. I tried it. It is a run-on sentence after a run-on sentence, terrible, unintelligible in many ways. But also, right, if you laud Hitler and what he did in Nazi Germany and his authoritarianism and murder of over 6 million people, then you would see whatever he has to say as worthy of reading. Also, to imagine that Trump really read anything is kind of laughable, but I'll digress.
It's interesting that both Hitler and Dr. King spent some time in prison and then put pen to paper, but one of those efforts turned out much, much better than the other, I think we can safely say. 503-231-8187. Let's go to the phones. Santiago, good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to see that that the journalist, you know, at least from last I heard, that at least Don Lemon was released. So
yes,
that's pretty good. I stand by the fact that, fascism has been here the entire time. I mean, it showed up here in a lot of ways during the Nazi Germany era, because Nazi Germany took cues from America, but there was also a German American like fascist bund where people were actually a part of this, particularly the Nazi movement here in America. But they also tried to erect their own American fascism after the original New Deal was passed. Smedley Butler wrote a book about it called War is a Racket. And so while I can definitely see the, you know, I can understand the analogs, but it's like, you know, it's fascist copying fascist copying fascist.
Yes.
You know, I think that we don't recognize that, like, American fascism, American style, Western style colonialism, it's been here the entire time and is really we can say that they're following Nazi Germany's cues, but like they got their cues from us. So I don't like the idea of calling it Nazi Germany, because it makes it seem as if it's something foreign or removed. We simply do not have the institutional memory to understand that this has already been here. I mean, we had Hitler. We just don't call him Hitler. We call him the Founding Fathers. They were bit as fascist and as genocidal as Hitler, as Goring, as Goebbels. You know, they made it possible for us to be. It made it possible for us indigenous folks to be. To be genocided. It made it possible, you know, they were a part of, and all of these other Western countries were part of the ring that were dealing in black bodies. I get what you're saying, Tracy, but I just don't like the idea of pretending that America is somehow unique or separate in the spread of genocide and fascism and terror in the world that has been overexploited for Western conquest.
I'm saying is that two things can be true, right? And you said it. We did it. They copied it, put it on steroids, and now we're copying them. But it's all part of the same thing. That really is my thesis.
Well, I mean, copying is kind of silly, because we brought fascists here, you know, even as POWs. They actually have a documentary about Nazis who were brought here as war criminals to like Tennessee or something. And the people in the documentary were like, oh, they were just such nice people. I couldn't believe that they were actually prisoners of war. They were just like us. And I just, that, you know, it's like, even as prisoners of war, even knowing what they did, they still found ways to like make it so that they could excuse the atrocities because they were white. And I just, like I said, I mean, it's, if we're really going to fight it, I mean, we can't say that like we have, America has never dealt with its sins. So the idea that like somehow that like American style democracy or what America has set up in the world is somehow going to save the world from the world it created, it just seems, because that's a lot of what these Democrats are leaning on, you know, to build these movements that they think are going to topple this raw fascist regime. You know, they keep setting up these corporate puppets who are corporate fascists who want to bring things back to the neoliberal style, the neoliberal democracy that caused this fascist catastrophe to happen. And that's why I'm saying that, like, if we're going to really tackle it, we have to understand America is no different in many ways than Israel or like Rhodesia or South Africa. You know, it functions in essentially the same way. The difference is that, like, they were defeated and America wasn't, but it doesn't stand outside of the pale of what of what those countries stood for and how they ultimately exploited people to be able to create a society at the expense of others.
Yeah. Can't agree with that. Can't disagree with that. Sorry.
Well, yes, I can. Yes, I think it's broadly true, but not true in its entirety. I would argue, in counterpoint, that yes, while I'll grant that all of what Santiago says is true, but also present within the American body politic has been a not insignificant block of people who have pushed against that tendency and are still pushing against it. I consider myself part of that effort. I can't speak for anybody but myself, but I'm not arguing right now that American democracy can save the world. I am arguing that maybe Americans can save American democracy from ourselves. That's where I'm trying to start this struggle. Santiago, are you still with us? No. Okay. What? I sound like I'm making apologies for American imperialism and fascism and all the horrible crimes that have been committed over our country's history when I reference this strain amongst the body politic that has pushed back against these things. I don't know if that's redemptive or not. I don't know if that makes us fundamentally different from a state like Nazi Germany or not. I hope that it does. I'm certainly going to grab onto that energy and keep trying to drag it forward. What do you think, Tracy?
I think, I don't know. I feel like we're in this, like I said, we are really in the dumbest timeline, and making sense of any of it is a fool's errand, because it really doesn't make sense unless you look at things like the replacement theory. Unless you look at things like, there was a report that just came out that's even, you know, upping the ante on white people not being a numerical majority in this country. Right, when we know that Hitler and other folks have, you know, engaged in ethnic cleansing, it's been out of a fear space, a fear of losing one's power and positionality at the top of, a hierarchy. And I talk about hierarchies of human value and how destructive they are. But really, to be at the top of a hierarchy is to be continually in a place of fear that someone's going to bump you out of that top spot. Yeah. And that's the only way that this can be explained. We can talk about Nazi or no Nazi or the history of fascism in this country. It's all guided by the same ideas and principles that to maintain your own positionality at the top of the hierarchy, you must destroy other people. You must dominate, exploit, find ways in which to maintain your power in that hierarchy.
Yeah, I think that's why official reprisals for threats to that perch at the top of the hierarchy are often so public and so seemingly theatrical. There's a reason that the people at the very top try to make examples of those who would challenge them. And I think all you have to do is look around, and we see evidence of that all the time happening right now.
Yeah.
But here's another thing that I think about. I think it's important to acknowledge the fascistic trend that has run through the United States since its inception. It's absolutely critical to acknowledge things like the genocide of Native Americans, the chattel slavery of enslaved Africans, the imprisonment of Asian Americans during the Second World War. I could go on and on and on with example after example. We absolutely need to stare those things in the face. We absolutely need to acknowledge them. But there's also a sense in which, you know, noting these things sort of tends to bring a conversation to a halt. Well, the United States isn't any better. Look at all the things we did. Yes. But the takeaway from that is not, well, okay, then carry on because we're no different from anyone else. I think the takeaway ought to be, well, there's a seed within us that is better than that. And it's our job to be better than that. It's our job to follow our better impulses and to root out and tamp down those negative aspects of our national character. I don't think it's the end of the story to acknowledge the fascism inherent in the American experiment. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense. It makes sense. And I think this is where people will probably attack you in thinking about American exceptionalism, because, you know, there are some of us who would like to believe that we could be true to what we said on paper, right? I mean, that was the thesis of Martin Luther King, be true to what you said on paper.
Yeah.
However, when those papers were being written by the very people who were owning slaves and dealing in human trafficking and raping their slaves, and, you know, like, those people are the people that wrote it on the paper.
Yep.
So how do we reconcile with that? But before we keep going, I want to make sure we get our callers to add to this conversation. And we have, I think, Judy on the line. Judy, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
I want to invite people to learn more about some events that are happening this week and how we can address what you've been saying that is true about the centuries of fascism here, and also the escalation around the world. What we can do about it locally. No King's 5051 PDX is better than the national one. They're having this Saturday, Neighbors for Change, creating a Portland by the people, for the people. Saturday, February 7th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Benson High School, 546 Northeast 12th. There's not much parking, so you would come by bus, by TriMed, or park for, like at Lloydson or something. At this, they're going to have Protect Oregon Coalition. Groups will be offering education and resources to help you connect with and build your community's resiliency. Really get involved in local politics. They're going to peruse tables for local organizations, focus on grassroots support and policy change, take part in classes, including de-escalation skills, how to write public testimony, an overview of how our local government works, featuring a real city council member, know your rights trainings, legal noncompliance, and so much more. Listen to speakers on current topics, how we got here, what to do now. Bring your kids to the Kid Zone to make crafts with the Portland Frog Brigade. Oh, they've got the cutest and fundraising little plastic printer, Portland Frogs. You can paint. It's really cute. Get a picture with them for yourself. There'll be food, performances, opportunities to get involved. A full program will be available soon. It's supported by donations. No one will be turned away for lack of funds. It'd be wonderful to show up. Go to 50501 No Kings Portland. There'll be mostly flat ground, wheelchair ramp, ASL interpretation. The only issue is you're going to have to park somewhere else. There's loads of bicycle racks.
Outstanding.
Thank you so much, Judy.
Look at that. Information you can use. Thank you so much, Judy. Appreciate that. That's 50501.com. Okay, let's go to one more caller, Tracy, and then I want to talk about what happened at the ICE facility here in Portland over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so Tawasi, you're up next. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, my family, we're Indigenous on my dad's side, and on my mom's side, we're Russian Jew. And so these conversations and fascism are very personal to me, because my family suffered as both Indigenous people and as, you know, a Jewish people, and had to survive both Hitler and whichever wire from the White House. Wow. So this, you know, this is, for me, this is deeply triggering and personal. Plus, the feds already targeted me. So I know exactly what it feels like and have historically had to suffer through this. So what my reason for calling is that yesterday is the anniversary of the 1856 end of the Long March for the Kalapuya, Malala, and Umpqua people. And we're still here. So as much, and this is true for my family and the fascists are hate-filled and dangerous, and they do genocides, and we resist it, and we're still here. And they love to pretend that they're great winners in the superior race, but you know what? We're still here. So even while they tell you about all the people that they killed, and there's smallpox blankets and the atrocities, but you know what? We're still here. So, you know, don't subscribe to all the terror and fear, but instead subscribe to the resilience of your ancestry, because they can't take that from you. So really quickly, the state of Oregon doesn't have a ratified treaty with the Congress. All of the forced marches, which you all should know about because you live on stolen land.
Woo.
All of those forced marches were done without authority from Congress. All of the stolen land on which you live is illegally stolen. And the, for instance, Chinook people who are still here should have a right to federal recognition. They should have their land back. And just because they don't have federal recognition or their land back doesn't mean you shouldn't pay reparations to the Chinook people. You live on their stolen land. And as long as we ignore the fascism that got us to this point and allow all of the erasure, then going forward, we're going to allow it again. So, you know, as a resilient Indigenous and Jewish person, look closely at what you're doing right now, because we're still here and they're still killing and arresting us at a higher rate than any other nationality in the country. But we're still here. And even though they're erasing the history of the long marches, that did happen. And the only reason that any listener or the institution of KBOO has anything is because it was stolen from us. So, you know, take your land acknowledgments and honestly, your horrible representation, because I don't think Jacqueline Keeler should be on our airwaves, and recognize that you took it from us. And even after all the deprivation, we're still here. So, you know, they can't ethnically cleanse all of our Latino brothers and sisters. And we have to change the dialectic to ethnic cleansing, because that's what it is. This isn't an immigration operation. It's ethnic cleansing. All right, I'm wound up. I'll let you guys go, but remember, we're here, you're on stolen land, and all of their lies won't change the truth.
Thank you, Tawazi.
Wow. Wow. May you always be here, Tawazi. I'm kind of dumbstruck here.
I mean, this is also the narrative of Black people in this country. Right, you try to kill us for 400 years. We're still here. It's Black History Month, right? There's an active erasure of Black history, just like there's an active erasure of Indigenous history. And, you know, being, you know, connected to organizations in Oregon, you know, working on stolen property in some of those institutions, and they would come to me and say, hey, read this land acknowledgement. And I'm going, an acknowledgement is not enough. What else are we doing? What else are we going to do as an organization? Because me getting up in front of a whole bunch of people and reading a statement that is very disingenuous on its face, and even worse, that you're acknowledging that you stole someone's land and not giving any solutions for what you're going to do to repair that harm, it's ridiculous. And I've said it several times, and organizations continue to do it. It feels performative.
Yeah.
I've also heard labor acknowledgments from organizations that are stealing the labor and exploiting their workers currently, right? You're like, wait a second, don't talk about, you know, land theft and theft of bodies to build the economy that is our capitalistic system right now, but yet you're not paying this person what they deserve to get paid. Like, come on now, come on now. So I'm right there with you, Tawazi, and thank you for being vulnerable on this show. What you contribute to the show is really, it is priceless. Thank you.
I second that. Yes. Okay. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to join the conversation today. So on Saturday, the 31st, Tracy, there was a labor march. A union organized march at the South Waterfront against ISIS and Border Patrol's campaign of ethnic cleansing in this country. It was quite well attended. The vibe was good. I was not there. This is what I've heard secondhand. The vibe was good. And a group of those protesters broke off and went down to the ICE facility, which is also in that same general neck of the woods. And this group included a lot of people, as I said, who are at the labor march, including their children who had come to the first march, came along to the second march. Apparently, ICE officers had, I don't know, established a no trespassing line on the driveway of that facility, which they say was violated by protesters. So out came the tear gas and the pepper balls. The group that was down there was largely hemmed in without very much means of egress. So the upshot of this was that a whole lot of people were gassed by mm-hmm. ICE agents, including children who had come along with their parents to a peaceful protest. There is copious social media footage available of this. You can also read the Willamette Week, in which a woman is interviewed who was tear gassed along with her 13-year-old daughter. So even a non-confrontational march is apparently grounds for ICE agents to react violently. I would consider the use of tear gas to be violent, the use of pepper balls also to be violent. So this has, of course, earned denunciations from all sorts of people from all walks of life in Portland, including our mayor, Keith Wilson. Now, the mayor in Portland, under our new reconstructed form of city government, wields not a whole lot of actual power and is mostly a figurehead and a sort of representative to the public about what's happening in city council. And in this particular context, Mr. Wilson, I think, fulfilled his role admirably. Here's what he said: to those who continue to make these sickening decisions, go home, look in the mirror, and ask yourselves why you have gassed children. Ask yourselves why you continue to work for an agency responsible for murders on American streets. No one is forcing you to lie to yourself, even as your bosses continue to lie to the American people. So this is a reminder that if you choose to protest against ICE, and I hope that you do, we need to bear in mind that this is a possible outcome. So a reality check here on our own streets, Chasey.
I mean, it's been the reality. I mean, yeah. People were getting fired on for marching for George Floyd with gas in their face and rubber bullets. And some people are, you know, maimed for the rest of their life in that experience. It is no different. I continue to say, if you don't see ICE as an arm of the same octopus as modern policing in America, we really can't have an authentic discourse. We can't have a real conversation. This has been happening. And once again, this response from ICE is to cool you out, is to make you think again, right? Make you think next time you want to oppose them in any kind of way, whether it be nonviolent or not, that you cannot do that. And they will meet you with, you know, the kind of violence that will make you do a double take. Should I do this again? That's the whole purpose of it. It's also to make an example of those people and their children to say, hey, don't come mess with us. This is our territory. This is our turf. It is how the police have always operated. If we can't see that, I'm not really sure what to say. But we have to keep showing up. and protesting and saying as a society, no, we are not good with this. This is not okay. These are our community members. You are harassing and harming, and now you're violating us and our First Amendment rights. Absolutely no. We've got to keep showing up, keep being nonviolent in that showing up. But no, that there is always going to be a risk of showing up and standing up for others.
Yes, absolutely. So the spokeswoman for the Department of Homeland Security, Trisha McLaughlin, of course, defended the agency's actions. She said, quote, over 250 rioters violently stormed an ICE facility in Portland, forming a, this part cracks me up, forming a shield wall with umbrellas while they attempted to tie the vehicle gate shut with ropes and moved a dumpster to block the front gate. Apparently, the dumpster move took place hours after the tear gas and pepper balls and rubber bullets were deployed against the crowd. So clearly, facts and their logical sequence don't have much bearing when one is a spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security. And, you know, I don't know about you, Tracy, but obviously a shield wall of umbrellas must be incredibly menacing.
Right. Right. Let me tell you.
So, all right, we will continue to keep you updated about what's happening here with anti-ICE protests in Portland and elsewhere. Let's go back to the phones. First up is She the Spirit. Good morning.
Good morning, but it's not Steve, it's She, S-H-E, as in female.
Yes, She the Spirit. Yeah,
She.
Yes.
As in woman, yes. Woman power. Right. I'm so glad I finally got through to you guys. I've been listening since last year. I want to say gather your feathers because we are about to fly. I am also part Native American, and I've been waiting on all the tribes to do a universal march on Washington. Although I think it's over 500-something tribes, I'm part Cherokee. And I'm waiting for the stolen land to be taken back. So I want to say that first of all. Second of all, I have a comment to make about Jeffrey Epstein and Weinstein. And a comment about the Nazi Germany, because I totally agree with what I heard earlier. America is the center and origin of fascism. During slavery, there were periods of slavery, and especially during the time when black people had to actually sleep under the high beds of their slave masters. And I don't want to say what they were there for, but they didn't have indoor plumbing. And this was before outdoor plumbing. That's for another conversation. But I want to say that Honorable John Lewis, he's passed a few years ago. He knew secrets. As me as a journalist, I know there's certain things you can write and people still won't believe them, no matter how many books you can cite and quote. There's just certain truths that America's not ready to receive. And no matter how often you tell them, they complain about you being woke. And this is why we're seeing our black history being taken out of universities and out of schools. And they're stepping on us in the most demeaning, fascist way to almost wipe out the suffering that we have to go through. Okay? They don't want us to be woke. And in the book of Revelation, we're called the dead because most of us can't even trace our history back before slavery. And to something you said earlier, Tracy, I want to say that they've been given 400 years already, okay? And God gives them enough time to amend their ways. Yes, it's true that there have been Jewish people that have helped us and Anglo-American people that have helped us, but they have not done enough. And a lot of them, like with Frederick Douglass, he used to go to all these abolitionist meetings. Now, I've read his book twice. It's a great book, and I recommend it because he tells us about things that the female face of fascism have done that people want to keep quiet. And that's like the middle finger, for instance. If you pass by a driver and you get the middle finger, everybody hates that. It infuriates them. But most people don't know why it infuriates them. During the periods of slavery, Frederick Douglass reveals that it was the Southern Belle, the female, who ordered the lynchings and who ordered the whippings. And she would hold up her middle finger to whoever was out there doing the whipping, to whip this person. And if she cocked her head to the side real fast, like the mobsters do, that meant lynch him. Another thing about lynching, when you were talking about people speaking up, Ida B. Wells used to go around to the different lynchings in different states to find out why all these men were being lynched. And they were lynching our children too, and our women. What Ida B. Wells found out was that most of our men were being lynched for reckless eyeballs, meaning they hadn't done anything wrong. They were just looking at the beauty of the slave master's women. When I'm trying to say this delicately, the neighbors, the other black neighbors, saw a lynching, they would be too afraid to speak up. So we never know exactly how many people were being lynched during that time. But the other thing I want to say, and if you're going to hang up on me, just hang up now, because I'm going to say that I've been a journalist since the 80s. And I've had to write about truth that's been hidden in America and a lot of people don't know about. And that's why I wanted to let you know I have something to say about Adolf Hitler, because I have his book and I read his book. But back to the lynchings. Jewish people, we're not all good people. Like Weinstein, nobody knows that Epstein is a Jew. Nobody knows that Weinstein was Jewish. Okay, so we have bad people in every ethnic group, okay? The secret of Weinstein and these islands he took his friends on, they love dark chocolate, and they've been trying to keep it hidden, and so that's why they have these fancy mansions on these islands. But the other thing is this, right here in this country, the reason why we had a large mulatto population, you know, that would be people that were half black and half Anglo or Jewish. Jewish men had a penchant for dark chocolate during slavery. And nobody knows about this because most people don't like to read the books that talk about it. And when they find out about it, they don't want to say anything about it. John Lewis, the late great John Lewis, wrote a book called Without Sanctuary, okay? He wrote that Jewish people also owned slaves and treated them badly and lynched them and whipped them, some whipped to death. One of the greatest books that talks about a little five-year-old girl is by Harriet Beecher Stowe. I'm sure all you guys have heard about her. She's one of the greatest authors of the last two centuries. And she talks about the little five-year-old girl who was being traded from one Jewish woman to another. And when they went to whip her because they thought she stole some jewelry at the age of five, they unveiled her blouse and found that she had no place left on her back to be whipped. Oh. It just so happened at that moment, Tracy, the little girl, the little cute blonde girl who was a neighbor or friend or something, you have to read the book because Uncle Tom's Cabin is one of the greatest books ever about the fascism during slavery. But then the little girl came in with the jewelry that they were blaming the black girl for stealing, right? And I was just thinking, you can't make this stuff up. I've read so many books, Abe, you will not believe some of the horrible things that have been done. So what Honorable John Lewis did was show pictures of lynched children. And the book is called Without Sanctuary.
He was put in jail for that, I'm sure.
I'm sorry?
We have other callers. Well, he was put in jail for a lot of things, but he was put in jail for that, I'm sure. Right, this country has a hard time. Yes, John Lewis went to jail several times, including for the Freedom Rides, including for protests. I mean, yeah, he was amazing. But we got to leave it there because we've got other callers who want to call in. We appreciate what you contributed to the show and invite you to call us again. Okay, see the spirit.
Yeah, thank you. All right, next up is Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Thank you. That is a challenge person to follow. I want to comment upon my idea of, I've stated before, that we are in the midst of coming apart as a country, that our 300 plus million people having a democracy that is regional, based in folks voting on their own interest in this size of a country is just unwieldable. The West Coast is ready to move forward in many ways. There still are issues, but I believe the West Coast does a better job. The East Coast does a better job of facing things that were uncomfortable from the past and do not want to have their head in the sand because they want to do better. Now, if you are someone in the Midwest or in the South and you follow Fox News, News Nation, Newsmax, conservative people, you are getting a perspective where you don't hear any of substantial material because it's uncomfortable. And that is a major problem. And with our cell phones and with our internet, people are going to their silos and they just are not going to go to a different opinion. Another thing I want to point out is I want to give a perspective on the human species. And I want to compare it. When I'm out for a walk, I come across a variety of dog owners. You have German Shepherd, you have a Doberman, you have a Pit Bull that gives off the attitude of don't even think of messing with me. They will harm you in a second. However, you'll come across a small dog once in a while that also gives off that attitude of don't mess with me. I'm small, but I am forceful. People, for whatever reason, the human species is drawn to alpha people. And that's why so many people are drawn to this president that we have right now, because they think that he is decisive. He is promoting something that maybe I don't agree with 100%, but he's not at all a wimp from what they perceive. Now, I consider him to be a big wimp, and the fact that he is unable to have a bigger view on most anything. But that is what a species is like, though. If you look at the animal kingdom, and an aggressive species will do better than someone who is trying to just get along. And that's what I believe is part of the problem with the liberal mindset at times, is that we want to embrace others. We want to acknowledge the sanctity of the human spirit. But there are people right now in control who don't want any part of that, and they're just going to ramrod over us until we stand up as a group, which we're starting to do, but it may be a little bit too late.
Hey, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. There's a lot to unpack there, Tracy, and I'm not sure that all of his analogies hold up, but I think what Joe got right in that call... or a couple of things. One, that people generally, he's right, people tend to not go outside of their respective silos for additional perspectives, opinions, or even, in the, I think, the case of most conservatives, you know, actual empirical facts. In fact, there's been quite a bit of research about this in recent years, and it's discovered that broadly, people who self-identify as liberals or leftists tend to have a multiplicity of sources to which they turn to get their news, whereas people who self-identify as conservatives tend to have a much narrower band of sources from which they get to their news. And of course, that leads us to the situation we've been in now for many years, in which a one chunk of the electorate feels it is entitled to their own facts. And all we have to do is look around to see the collateral damage that has come from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe also was getting to a point that I think I've made about journalism and how, you know, the right has been very strategic in buying up all of media to paint a narrative, and people who don't live outside of that narrative and don't have other sources other than Fox News and now CBS and ABC and Sinclair Broadcasting and Star and all of these large conglomerates that own local news, own national news, and will basically placate us into voting for Trump 2.0 by not naming all of the things, right? You know, all of the convictions all of the credible accusals of sexual impropriety and manipulation, you know, abusing his own ex-wife, all of these things, right, that don't name any of these things and slide us even deeper into fascism. That's all been strategic. So, of course, we're going to have people who have different opinions because they're only getting fed a version of the story that is sanitized for them by that very political machine that benefits from Trump being in office.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. I think I mentioned on last week's program an argument I had with an old classmate of mine in which he claims that protests in Minneapolis were created by and driven by the media. And I think that's a conclusion you can only reach if your sources of information, you know, oscillate in the same narrow band. It wasn't the news media. It wasn't the commercial media that drove the resistance movement in Minneapolis. It was the recordings taken by individual people and distributed locally, which picked up steam and were distributed more widely. The only reason we have footage of the murders of Rene Goode and Alex Preti are because there were other people there to film them in real time. It's not as if they were orchestrated to take place in front of a news crew. So where you get your information matters. The sort of tests that you apply to the information you receive to determine whether that information is or is not factual, all of that matters. But sadly, I think as a whole, as a broad culture, we are largely media illiterate. Not many of us are equipped to make those sorts of judgments. For example, not many of us were taught in school or have learned since being in school how to recognize good reporting from bad, how to tell when a story is sourced, you know, and who those sources are and whether or not you can determine as a reader the relative reliability of those sources. And believe me, you can do this if you know what to look for. But most people, I don't think, are equipped with those skills.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I talk about education and the fact that, you know, education is on the line, there's a huge part of education that is a threat to those very people who want to frame a narrative in a certain kind of way. And that's information literacy, media literacy. And a lot of schools are, you know, bringing in different kinds of sources, blowing up the canon of literature. And that is really, really scary to the fascists. Because if you create a society, a populace that can discern for itself what is good information and bad information, that can say, yeah, I'm not citing Wikipedia because somebody could just go in there and edit this article and it can be complete nonsense, right? No, I'm not using Newsmax that has been bought and sold or InfoWars, right, as a legitimate source. That's scary. And because there are so many people who did not get that skill and are not operating from that sense of, you know, what is good information and bad information, they can be absolutely manipulated for the purpose of advancing fascism. And also, right, we can't have any of these conversations without talking about the plague, which is racism.
Yes.
On people's perceptions, where they get their news, who they think is legitimate as a source. Do they believe Kristi Noem when she gets up in front of everybody and says that, you know, these people are domestic terrorists? That's why they deserve to get shot in the face by ICE in broad daylight in the view of all of us.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely right. And finally, to Joe's point about so-called alpha people. Well, yes, I suppose people are drawn to those individuals who are extraordinarily charismatic or talented or intelligent or attractive or athletic, you know, all of these things, right? All these sorts of people have always enjoyed positions of prominence socially. But the extent to which his supporters view Donald Trump as an alpha, you know, I just don't get it. I think that in the minds of the patriarchal MAGA right, Trump is an alpha because he represents the unchained patriarchal id, right? He is the ultimate man's man because he's able to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, without any sort of consequence. And that is the world that MAGA is talking about when they say make America great again. They are talking about putting white men, white Christian men, back on top in their rightful place and squashing everybody else back into the boxes from which they came. That is what we're talking about. And that is how Donald Trump represents alpha humanity or the alpha male to the MAGA crowd. It is not a healthy conception of masculinity. It is not a healthy set of traits for a leader. And it's not a set of traits that should come within spitting distance of any kind of real power. And we are witnessing in real time the carnage and destruction that has resulted. We got a lot of work ahead of us, Tracy.
Ma'am. We talked about the patriarchy, racism, land theft. I mean, it's so much. It's so many layers. But, you know, as I'm talking about, it's Black History Month, I'm continually inviting people. This is an invitation to, you know, we had Sheet of Spirit on talking about some of these original documents, the Life of a Slave Girl, the work of Harriet Jacobs. Getting back to the original... the realities of slavery that nobody wants to talk about. It was land theft, and then it was rape. It was the stealing of people. It was brutality. It was torture. It was cutting off limbs and ears. Like, we have to look that in the face, and until we look that in the face, we will do nothing about what's happening today. We have normalized the turning away from the truth and history, and it's time to look it in the face and say, what are we going to do with this? What do we want to be as a society? I just invite you, if you are loving what you hear on KBOO, of course, our ability to give you good information, to have these conversations is dependent on our ability to operate. And so give to KBOO, read some stuff, read a book, please.
Yes, read, everyone. Read. I think that's a perfect place to end today's program. I want to thank everybody who called in today and took part in the conversation. Also to everyone who tuned in and listened. We appreciate you. We depend on you. And we have a lot of work in front of us. So please stay tuned. This has been Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. For Tracy Simmons.
Hi, I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1990.